whatsoever about the mission of the Long Island Center. It is to become a great public university center with all that this implies. The master plan recently published by the trustees and approved by both the governor and the regents leaves no question in this regard. This is a commitment which will not be compromised. It has been said that there is among you some disagreement as to educational policy. I should be most surprised if such were not the case. Faculty seldom are in complete agreement on such matters, but it has always seemed to me that the very dialogue of a university provides the best means for accommodation and resolution. In order to keep communications between the administration and the faculty open, I shall, for the present, confer with the Committee on Faculty Governance, which the faculty elected last spring. I should like to meet with that committee tomorrow, and I plan to have a meeting of the entire faculty just as soon as possible. I know that for some time you have been carrying on your scholarly duties under great stress, and I hope that we now can join in working towards establishment of that kind of an environment conducive to the best performance of these tasks. I ask your cooperation, not in my name, but in the name of the university and the students. Signed, Thomas H. Hamilton. Now, on the same date, the secretary of the faculty, who was Jim Raz, sent a letter on behalf of the faculty to President Hamilton. This was done.
They crossed.
Well, no, I actually think that they may have crossed. I'm not sure about that. But Hamilton was on campus, so. Jim Raz was secretary of the faculty at that time, and he put together this letter and I think consulted with a few people, and he apologizes for not just having a chance to consult with everyone, but I think they wanted to express how happy they were that Hamilton was on the scene. Dear President Hamilton, on behalf of the faculty, I would like cordially to welcome you to Long Island Center. Last May, the faculty elected a committee on faculty government to formulate new bylaws. For the past few weeks, the members of this committee and myself, who are at present the only elected representatives of this faculty, have been informally exploring these problems in order to present a tentative plan to the administration. We would welcome an early opportunity to discuss with you what we regard as the urgent problem of reestablishing communication with the administration by means of a functioning faculty government at Long Island Center. That paragraph, that sentence says more than than it appears to. The members of the Committee on Faculty Government are Richard L. Levin, English Chairman, Leonard Eisenberg, Physics, Leonard Gardner, Education, William G. Lister, Mathematics, and William T. Snyder, Engineering. Sincerely yours, B. James Raz, Associate Professor and Secretary of the Faculty. Now, Hamilton was here for a short time, and he then appointed, or designated, I suppose, Harry Porter, who was, what was he, dean of?
He was provost.
Provost of the university.
Yes.
Well, he assigned.
He had formerly been president of Fredonia.
That's right. He assigned Harry Porter as full-time on-site administrator at Oyster Bay. And the people in biology were getting increasingly upset by Willis Pepineau and their complete inability door, disappeared overnight, and was never heard from again by anyone that I know of. He probably went back to the National Science Foundation, which, something like that, which he had never cut his ties. And we had a wonderful older lady as secretary, Mrs. Remsen, who just could not get over Pechenov disappearing in the middle of the night. And she would always say, "I am like the Arabs. He folded his tent and stole away into the night." So then that left us without a chairman. And I was under a lot of pressure to resume the chairmanship, and I met with Harry on this, and Harry said, "I want to appoint you as acting chairman of the Department of Biological Sciences." I said, "No." I said, "I have no desire to be an acting chairman, because at this time you have full chairman in physics and chemistry and mathematics, and if I am going to represent the interest of the biological sciences, I want to be a full chairman as well." So he was reluctant to do that, and things dragged on and on and on, and even though I didn't have a post, I was organizing and the meetings and so on during that time. And finally, after a couple of requests of that kind, Bob Hamilton appeared on the campus, and they called me in. And there was no discussion. I came in, and he said, "I would like to have you be chairman of the department." And I said, "I accept." So I resumed the chairmanship then, and held it from then until for another 6 years, 1967, when I resigned. So Hamilton was able to grasp the situation in a way which I don't think Harry ever did. Harry was trying to pour a lot of oil on troubled waters, but I don't think he acted positively enough in order to bring order back into the chaos which had occurred. So then, you know the rest of the story, I guess.
Let me ask you a couple of questions.
When did you actually come?
September 4th, 62.
So Harry was on until that time.
Okay.
Just until that time. Okay. I didn't have it. Because I left the campus in June of 62 for what amounted to about a 9 month leave. We were putting this BSCS book into its final hardcover form at Stanford. So I was away from campus from, let's say, June until January of 63. So I wasn't actually on campus when you came.
Who took your place?
I think that Bernie Tunick was acting chairman at that time. He served as acting chairman a couple of times when I had to be away. Well, yes, your questions.
When I came, I had the impression that the faculty was split and that there were three people and there were people who were OSIN people, and that I know that I had to deal with some of the reporters from Newsday about inquiries which they made as to what was going on, because some people in the faculty had written to Newsday, and the whole thing is vague now, but there were editorials in Newsday about a strike torn the campus, and And if one person on one side proposed something,
yeah,
the other people would knock it down.
Yes, I can understand that.
There was one day when a member of the philosophy department came in. He sat down. He said, Dr. Hartzell, this place is going to go to the dogs unless you fire that person and that person. There were two people. They were chairman of departments.
Well, I think that ceilings were running very high. There is no doubt that there was a number of faculty members who supported President Lee.
And do you know who, for what reasons?
Yeah, certainly those to whom he gave appointments in his administration were his supporters. And there were people who received either appointments, acting dean of the graduate school, or maybe dean of the College of Arts and Sciences.
No, no, wait a minute, wait a minute. Well, I don't know. But when I came as acting chief administrative officer and dean of arts and sciences. In other words, and it took me about less than a semester to realize that I couldn't do justice to both hands. That's when I appointed Stan Ross, because I enjoyed working with him on the selection of faculty in history and the history department.
Right. Well, Sidney Gilbert had occupied that post in Lee's administration.
We had a line for the dean of the graduate school that was not filled.
There was an acting, Arnold Feingold was doing that.
Yes, that was, yeah, that's right.
And so these people, I think, for good reason, were supporters of President Lee. This time, 1961, Olson is still dean of the faculty, also is still dean of students. Reuben Welch is librarian. David Tilley was director of admissions, and he was here when you came.
Yeah, dean of students.
Terry Lunsford was assistant to the dean of faculty. And Donald Cook was assistant librarian. So that was the administration. I don't have a 1962 catalog, so I can't tell, but
I don't think I'd be in it.
You are in, let's see, the first one that I have, I guess, is 63, where you are listed as administrative officer. And Stan Ross is acting dean, College of Arts and Sciences. And David Fox is acting dean of the graduate school. And Tom Irvine is dean of the College of Engineering. Those are the four high administrative officers.
Okay. Well, that's quite a saga.
Yes, it is. At any rate, I think that's the Oyster Bay transition was difficult but orderly. Transition from Oyster Bay to Stony Brook. Buildings were opened in the fall of 1962. Humanities and chemistry buildings and some dormitories. And they were meeting.
over the six basins ripped off the wall and finding five of the six mirrors missing, except the mirror that was still there wasn't over the basin, that was still there. And the big glass doors that connected the upper lounge to the hallway had been kicked out. All the glass had been kicked. Those were brand new buildings now. They had been kicked out. We had Chinese reed wallpaper put along the halls there that had just been torn off in huge sheets. Very expensive paper at that time. And it was quite depressing to come to a new campus and find that it had been partly demolished already in just a period of 6 months. That's all it took. Or less. 5 months, I guess. I came back. The biology building had not yet been completed, and I took an office in the humanities building. And we were holding laboratories in the chemistry building at that time, biology laboratories. And I was working very hard to get the biology building opened, and we occupied during the summer and officially in the fall of 63, if I remember correctly. Occupy an office in the humanities building that some instructor in history had had before, and he had been teaching a course in medieval history. And on the shelf there was a stack of blue books from the semester that had just ended, and so I took down the stack of books, the blue books, exams, and I found in 10 papers medieval, spelled in 6 different ways, their course in medieval history. Medieval history, but they didn't learn how to spell the word. So then, you're interested in...
Students
who entered at Ice
think we're making some progress. Well, thanks very much.
You're very welcome.
Do you have any input on the tax farm situation?
Well, what?
Hi. On the acquisition of tax farm.
Yes. You want to say a few words about that?
Let me say a few words about that. It's what I can remember. We were very interested in developing the marine sciences as a part of biology.
And right from the beginning?
From the time that George Williams joined us, which was, I think, 2 years after the beginning, he was a marine biologist. The boardwalk lived in the Charles Mansion for a while.
Was a member of the Marine
Marine Sciences Research Center when it returned to Stony Brook. And then he transferred to the Department of Ecology and Evolution later on.
Okay.
Well, that's a little bit of the history of our acquisition of Flax Pond. We had a lot of problems with the people who lived around Flax Pond in determining what the coastal rights were going to be and how far the land acquisition was to go off to the east, and so on.
So let me tell you just one thing. One of the first times that I met Lord Melville was when I was asked to come to a luncheon at Dan Fuller's.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
And Lord Melville and Peter Snyder, his counsel in the firm of Pelletro, were there. And Bickman, who owned the pond at the time, president of the Sand and Gravel Company, had apparently introduced a barge into the pond. And the village was up in arms.
And he was going to mine the bottom.
He was going to dredge the sand and gravel and sell it.
I remember that now.
Sell it. And he was going to build a marina around it, and have houses around the edge of the marina. That was the plan. And they were distraught. Could the university do something? And they didn't want the pond disturbed.
Right.
Well, I knew.
Nor did we.
Yes, I knew just enough because it had been mentioned in the sessions I'd had with Harry Porter, the four heads of the institutions, Albany, Binghamton, and Buffalo, met with Harry occasionally. And I knew that Buffalo was to have limnology and we were to have marine sciences. So it seemed to me that this was a research facility. So I got on the phone to Harry and told him what the story was and urged the purchase of the pond and that they had to condemn it. Then pay something like $400,000 for it to Bickman. And the Department of Conservation, I think, had to take the title. So that they paid 51%, the university 49%.
I think that's right.
And got an easement.
Yeah,
the university got the easement so that they could do whatever they like with the money.
Yes, that's right. I remember the 51% figure now.
Yeah.
And of course, the entire village of Oldfield was behind it, some of this, in order to, because they did not want a marina going in there, and we didn't want that